Last Sunday, we started a conversation through the most famous sermon of Jesus. Okay, we call it the Sermon on the Mount because he preached it on the side of a mountain. And as we said last week, Jesus probably preached this sermon everywhere he went, right? There's a lot of times in the scripture where it says that Jesus taught the people, but doesn't tell us what he taught the people. This is probably what he taught the people. We don't know that, but we know that most likely, like we do today, when you travel and speak, you know, on any front, you probably bring your message in multiple places. Even with modern technology and recordings, we still do that. So Jesus taught this material, no doubt, many places, but Matthew records it on the side of this mountain for us to read. We haven't even met Matthew yet in our journey. We're going to meet Matthew soon, but we're not always going chronologically tightly here. But Matthew records the message that Jesus gave us on the mountainside that he probably gave other places. In fact, Luke tells us one other place where he teaches this elsewhere, almost the same content, little different. So he probably brought it everywhere. Anyhow, all that to say, it's a long sermon. It's not like it is in today where we go to church on Sunday morning, 45 minutes service, sermon or so by Arlen, and then a few songs to sing and then, you know, greet a few people and we leave. That's how we do church in the modern, you know, drive our car home and we're done. In those days, you traveled a long ways to get to hear someone like Jesus. You made the effort to get there. It was often an all-day affair. Sometimes they would feed the multitudes while they were there because they gather. It was a long deal. You could read the three chapters of the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5, 6, and 7. You could read them in about 15 minutes. But Jesus didn't take 15 minutes to teach them. Those are just the summaries, the bullet points of a very long conversation. So what we're going to do for the next few weeks, starting last Sunday, is take a few of the major themes in the Sermon on the Mount and take a whole week to cover each theme. Now, we're not going to cover every verse in the Sermon on the Mount. Just like when we went through the Old Testament, we didn't cover every single thing in there. And we'll not do every miracle Jesus did or every parable he taught. We'll do most of them. We're doing things intentionally. But we always encourage you to read the Bible for yourself and get the whole story. But we'll cover a lot of the Sermon on the Mount over the next several weeks, starting last week, to see what Jesus taught over and over again as recorded in this one instance. So last week we began by seeing the first thing we saw was the Beatitudes. And this was Jesus talking to the crowd of people who were gathered. He had different people. He had his disciples who were always with him. He had the religious leaders who would show up to critique him and find fault. He had the most of the people were just folks looking for healing from the miracle worker. They came because his teaching was famous through Galilee or because he did miracles. They wanted healing or to hear what God had to say. And so they gathered, and Jesus taught them how to follow him. And what God blesses. And the Beatitudes we saw last week are a list of the things that God blesses that are counterintuitive to how the world sees things. So by the world scoreboard, you might feel like you're losing, but Jesus says, hey, don't pay attention to that scoreboard. We're playing a completely different game. This is what God blesses. And at the end of that sermon, I'm reviewing this for a reason today. At the end of that sermon, we said, what should we do? Well, what we should do are the things that Jesus taught us that God blesses in the Beatitudes. So he gave you eight things. I want to review them real quick. We said, remember your need for God, right? Never forget, no matter how successful or good you get in life, we always need him. Like the song we just sang, Lord, I need you. Oh, I need you. Every hour, I need you. We said, grieve as needed. It's okay to hurt. That part of living is hurting. We don't get to live without pain. It's just part of the gift of life. It includes all the ups and downs, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And it doesn't mean that God is not there or that he doesn't care. That's just part of the privilege of life is the spectrum of the winning and losing and loving and losing. And so grieve is needed. The principle is that God is very close to us and closer than ever when we grieve, and it's okay to hurt. We said, stay humble. Let me move on. We said, pursue justice. In other words, pursue justice means don't pursue my agenda, but pursue what's just. Not what's best for me, but what we often say, what's best for people is what's best. Pursue justice. We said, show mercy. We all benefit from mercy, so we should also extend mercy to others as well. Jesus taught us to keep your heart pure. Keep your heart pure means don't let this world get us too jaded and steal that innocence and that pure faith away. That causes us to say, what's the point? I'm just going to do what's best for me, and I'm going to become worldly in my pursuits. I'm going to keep my heart pure. We said, work for peace or be a peacemaker. Not someone who just finds peace for me in my life or me with you, but you with others. I want to throw gasoline on other people's fires. I want to douse out the fires and cause peace. I want to bring peace into the world. And then we said Jesus taught us to let God's view be what drives you. Don't let the pressure to do something wrong because everyone else is doing it cause you to participate. Don't be afraid to do what's right because people make fun of you. Don't let persecution talk you out of what is best. Instead of succumbing to peer pressure, let God's view be what drives you. And so those are the Beatitudes. Those are the things that we can learn from them. And now we're going to pivot to a new subject. Throughout the sermon, it's a long message, probably all day, that Jesus taught. There are different topics within it. But today, we're not pivoting that radically. In fact, the last week and this week are going to go together. That's why I reviewed it. Now, next week, I'm going to warn you ahead of time, next week's a pretty serious pivot. It's almost like Jesus changes who he's even talking to within his crowd. He doesn't change, but he kind of changes his focus next week. You'll enjoy that maybe, or maybe you'll hate it. I don't know. But today, it's a minor pivot from the Beatitudes, where Jesus tells us what God blesses, and he encourages us, to now challenging us to continue in our calling to follow him. And so we're going to look at only four verses today, just four short verses, but boy, do they pack a punch. And so let's look at them together, starting with Matthew chapter 5 and verse 13. Ready? Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But what good is salt if it has lost its flavor? Can you make it salty again? It'll be thrown out. It'll be trampled underfoot, is worthless." The idea of salt being useful for certain purposes is a big idea. In fact, it's funny because we had got together between services and Jens, when the worship team came by, all of a sudden he was listing off a bunch of other uses for salt than the ones I gave you. But let me give you a few. Salt does a lot of things. In ancient times, it did things that we don't use it for as much now, but we still do. There's modern applications. But one thing salt has always done is it has done what Jesus said. It has brought flavor. It's like a spice or anything else that you would use to season something so it doesn't taste so bland. You ever have some food that you're like, boy, this food needs something on it, you know? Or this food is really good. I wonder why. Well, it's because it was well spiced. It's got good seasoning. Now, when I was a kid, I'll tell you what needed the most help was vegetables when I was little. If I was going to eat vegetables, they needed something. Now, I'm embarrassed to say this as a old man now, but here's the thing. When I was a kid, I thought ketchup was the perfect topping to vegetables. Because if you slather ketchup on them, they're edible. Now, I'm going to tell you, that is gross to think about right now. I am so disturbed that I ever did that. Ketchup, as I've gotten older, ketchup is not good on anything. Maybe occasionally with some fries, but sometimes fries don't need it. But why ketchup? It's such a, like, our palate's supposed to mature, hopefully, out of ketchup at some point as we get older. But I'll tell you, even now salt is nice. In fact, maybe in America we have perhaps a sodium problem, I don't know. But put a little flavor on that stuff and it tastes better, right? But if salt, here's the thing, if the salt has lost its flavor, if the spices you're using have lost their flavor and they no longer season the food, you wouldn't put it on there. If you've got something out of the cupboard to season your dinner and it didn't add any flavor, you'd be like, well, this stuff must have gone bad. It must not work anymore. You toss it out. You wouldn't put it on for nothing, right? It's only worthwhile if it has its flavor. Now, salt has served some other purposes as well. In ancient times, before modern technology and refrigeration techniques, salt was really used as a preservative to keep food from spoiling. We still do that to some degree on certain things, especially if you buy stuff in the store that you take out of its package and 3 years later it's still in the same condition. But anyhow, in the ancient times, you didn't have refrigeration techniques. Things would spoil faster, so you could pack certain foods with salt to preserve them or keep them from going rotten, especially meat, to preserve it so it would not go bad so fast. Now, if the salt you packed around the meat lost its efficacy, you wouldn't do it anymore. You're like, that's worthless salt. You toss it out because it didn't have that potency anymore. That's the point. If it loses that, what good is it? Now, in modern days, we use salt for other things as well. One of the things is in Cedar Lake, we use it to soften our water. And I'm not even sure it does the trick, okay? But, you know, soften your water with salt. Or in the winter weather up here, we will throw it outside. We'll put salt on the ground to melt the ice. But imagine if we brought a bunch of salt from the store, bought it here, and threw it on the parking lot or the driveway, and it didn't melt any ice. You'd be like, well, that stuff's worthless. We're not buying that again. We're not going to use that anymore. We just toss it out. The point of salt is that it has its flavor, it has its potency. And if we lose that, what's the point? And Jesus says to us, we're the salt of the earth, spiritually speaking. What does that mean? We're the salt of the earth. He says, He says, don't lose your flavor. Now, I know that I've been around the church world enough to know that some religious people get really weird ideas of what that means. Like, we're the salt of the earth. That's why we wear our haircuts a certain way, or we dress a certain way, or we, you know, have a certain kind of playlist that we listen to, you know, because it's like weird measurements that are nothing biblical. I think the best answer is we're salt. Don't lose our flavor. How would we lose our flavor? We would stop doing the things that Jesus just taught us last week. Look at the Beatitudes. He told us, don't lose your flavor. Don't stop doing what I've taught you to do in this world. Hey, remember your need for God and stay humble and pursue justice and keep your heart pure and work for peace and show mercy and let God's view be what drives you. As we do the things that Jesus taught us and we follow him, he says, you're the salt of the earth. Don't lose that. This world needs people who carry those virtues, who carry the way of Christ into the world in which we live. The world's a better place when we live out the values and teachings of Jesus. Now, there's more to that, but let me go ahead and jump. Jesus is going to make the same point again in verse 14. He says in verse 14, you are the light of the world. He's making the same point. He's saying a different analogy. You're salt, you're light, okay? He says, you're light of the world, like a city on a hilltop that cannot be hidden. Now, we think of a city on a hilltop, especially in ancient times, like Jerusalem was a city on a hilltop. You could see it a mile away. There it is. Can't hide it. He says, that's how light's supposed to work. It's not hidden. You're the light of the world. And of course, Israel was supposed to be a city on a hill, spiritually a light of the world, but they had long since abandoned many of those things and had suffered, you know, the fallout nationally. And Jesus was now saying, I'm bringing something brand new through you to the whole world. And now if you're my followers, if you follow my teachings, which by the way, this whole Sermon on the Mount culminates in Jesus saying, hear my teachings and do them, okay? And we're the salt of the earth, we're the light of the world. Same idea. Don't lose your flavor if you're salt. Don't dim if you're light. Don't lose that. It's important that we keep a hold of what makes us salt and what makes us light. However, Jesus is going to pivot to an entirely different application here. He's going to pivot from just saying, stay salty, my friends, right? stay salty or be light, to now saying there's another side of this thing that's equally as important but might not get as much of our attention. He explains in verse 15. He says, no one lights a lamp and then puts it under a basket. Instead, a lamp is placed on a stand where it gives light to everyone in the house. So the temptation is, the illustration is this, that you walk into a house that's dark. They didn't, in those days, have electricity to flip the switch and the lights come on. They would turn on, they would light a lamp, and the kerosene or whatever would help the lamp fire up and be bright and bring light into a dark house because it was nighttime or because there's no windows weren't open. So it would bring light into the dark room. He says, you don't go into the room and light the lamp, casting light everywhere that is needed, and then turn around and pick up a box and cover the lamp up. Like, why would you do that? What's the point of having a lamp and a light on if you're going to cover it. So I wanted to illustrate that for you. So that's where these boxes come in. If you didn't open your box like Anthony asked you not to, I wanted to warn you, if you're expecting something from Jared's, you're going to be sorely disappointed. There's nothing that fancy in here at all. But go ahead and open your box and pull out your very coveted trinket, okay? This is going to blow you away. It's a tea light. If you're watching online, as Anthony said, I'm sorry, we can't pass this through the screen to you, but I'll try to illustrate up here. Y'all got this, hopefully? Okay. Now, we understand this tea light is not that bright. It's a little battery-operated thing. If we all turned them on together, it would add probably no brightness to this room. But I didn't want to pass out real candles because I was afraid the wax would damage the chairs or further damage the carpet. I didn't want to pass out kerosene lamps for all the same reasons and more. So, you know, we have these little tea lights that don't do much of anything, but let's pretend, okay, that they're really more powerful than they are. Now, also it's bright in this room, so you don't even need them, right? Now, at Christmas Eve, when we use these tea lights a lot, we turn if it's dark outside, we turn the lights off, and it's kind of nice for an ambience for our worship portion of Christmas Eve service. We love that. But right now, they're not going to do much because they're just tea lights. So you have to pretend that these are like shining beacons of intensity, okay? Can you do that? Now, I want everyone to turn on your tea light. You done? Already did it? All right. Now, you're ahead of me. Now, do me a favor. Here's what we're going to do. Are you ready? Take your light, leave it on, but put it in the box and close the box. All right? Leave it on, but put it back in the box and close it up. It's not the perfect illustration because this box leaks on one of the sides here. But you got it in there? Is it still on? Now you might be saying, Arlen, that is the stupidest thing I've ever. Why in the world would we take a light, turn it on, and then put it back in the box and close the box? Why would we do that? You might as well not even turn it on. If you're going to put it in the box and close the box, you might as well not turn it on. What's the point? Right? That's the point Jesus was making. You don't go in a house and turn on a lamp and say, oh, good, and then put a basket over it. Like, what's the point? The light might as well not even be on. Right? Might as well not even have it on if it's going to be covered. Might as well not have any light at all. We're supposed to be the light, the salt, but if it's in a box or under a basket, what's the point of being light at all? I've been around enough to know that Christians, we can fall into this trap. Now, I want to preface this by saying something. Sometimes we'll say the problem with the church or problem with Christians. There are plenty of problems, but I want to be clear. Thank God for Jesus and his teaching and the impact that it has made through Christian people for the last 2,000 years. So much good has been done in the world because there have been sincere, wonderful people following Christ. That's why we're still here today. Now, there have been a lot of bad apples in the bunch, a lot of abuses by people, been, you know, whether on national levels or on local levels, there have been people who have abused and done terrible things in the name of Jesus. But that is not what Jesus modeled or taught. And I say that because the skeptics will always want to bring those examples out as proof against Christianity or against God. But the truth is that for all the bad apples, there have been a lot of people who followed the teaching and example of Jesus and have made a difference so that 2,000 years later, we're still here all across the planet today, gathered in his name. We've made a difference in the world through all the good, the hospitals have been built, the children that have been rescued, the trafficking thing that has been fought, the hungry that have been fed. I mean, the good that has been done globally and has effectively to spread the message for 2 millennia now is undeniable. So I don't want to sit here and bash like Christians have all been nuts just because many or some are. Those ones stand out. What I want to say is this. It is a tendency amongst Christians, at least in my life experience, to sometimes pivot ourselves into our boxes, to hide ourselves away, to say, hey, we're the light of the world, and then kind of bunker down in our little containers, get into our little holy huddles. You know, shining bright inside our boxes, woo! But we don't want to get out into the place where it's needed because, you know, if you do that, well, it's dark out there, it's scary. So you can stay here in the box and you feel safe. You feel good about yourself. You get together with, get a bunch of lights in the same box, and you're like, woohoo, feels good. Feels validating. Because we're all bright here together in the little container. Churches can do that so easily because it's a way to retreat. And I'm not throwing stones. I've been guilty. I was raised in a very strong, traditional, legalistic, you could argue, background. That's how I pastored as a young 25-year-old kid when I first became a pastor. That's the kind of church I knew, that kind of church I led. It's my fault. Where we'd meet several times a week in our little holy huddle. I mean, I don't mean like we meet twice on Sunday mornings now for the same sermon. I mean, I preach like four different messages a week, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And I wrote Sunday school lessons. Quality of content is terrible when you're putting out that much. But anyhow, and we would gather multiple times a week. And then we would pray for revival. You know, we're pray for revival. We weren't in community. We weren't touching anyone's lives. We weren't doing any good. But the truth is, if our church would have shut down, the town probably wouldn't even notice we're missing. Not only is our church in the old days hidden away in a different spot, but also we were kind of in our little bubble. We could have disappeared and no one would have missed us. And that's an indictment against any church. If we wouldn't be missed if we went away, we're doing something wrong. And so, but we had our little methods. We would go out about once a week for an hour or two to do door-to-door evangelism on weeks when the weather wasn't too bad or nothing else was going on. And if we could persuade someone in a 5 to 15 minute sales pitch to change their entire worldview and embrace ours, pray a magic prayer, then we could put a notch in our belt and say we're making a difference. And if not, we just shake the dust off our feet and say, well, you know, whatever. And go back to our huddles. And even when someone would respond because they were trying to get us to leave, like, okay, I'll pray if you'll leave, you know, or whatever, we didn't really see any really lasting evidence of any difference that made because we had no relationship with people. We just go back to our spot, be light in our little box and say, pray for revival. Now, maybe that's not your experience with church. That's great. Good for you. I'm glad. Hopefully, if this is your first church you've ever been to, we're hopefully trying to model a better way of being something different. But here's the thing I'm trying to say. I led that way for years, and it hit me one day. What are we doing? Getting out and making a difference and being in community with people who we need to know and be impactful, do some good. You got to get out of the container. You got to get out of the box. Otherwise, what good is it doing anybody if we're nice and bright in our own little containers? Same with salt, by the way. Salt is great. We said, don't lose your saltiness. Salt on food, if it loses its flavor, it's no good. But you know what? How else salt is no good? Salt is no good if it's nice and flavorful in a pretty little container on the shelf that no one touches. Like, but boy, is our salt shaker beautiful. Like, we're even proud of our brand. Morton's is the best brand of salt, let me tell you. Baptist is the best brand of church. Pentecostal is the best brand of church. Reformed is the best brand of church. Catholic, Lutheran, Presbyterian, you fill in the blank. You know, we're proud of our brands. Join our brand. Get more brand recognition. But if we're just sitting there saying we're salt, but we're not actually salting anything, we're not coming into contact with anything that needs salted, is not doing any good. If we're light, but we're not getting out there in darkness that needs light, we're not doing any good. And Jesus says, be salt, be light, but you got to be doing the things applied where we're needed. He says in verse 16, he says, in the same way, let your good deeds shine out for all to see so that everyone will praise your heavenly Father. He says, you got to be in a spot where the things that we do aren't unnoticed because we're just hidden away. We got to be out there connected and doing good in the world in ways that are visible and noticed and appreciated. And people will see that and say, wow, that's good. And God gets the glory. Again, when we get privately tucked away in our little containers, our little salt shakers, bragging on our brand name, or in our little boxes locked away, when we do that sort of thing, no one's going to see anything and praise the Lord. The sad part is social media has allowed us to lock ourselves away, but use social media to throw our opinions out there so that whatever people do see of Christians sometimes, sadly, is a bunch of griping. The problem with the world today, I don't agree with people who do this and that. Let me tell you another thing. I don't agree with how people live and how they vote and how they, you know, raise their family and how their lifestyle. And so the only impression we give anybody from our little spots is a thing that turns them away from our Father in heaven. Rather than getting out and just doing some good, doing good stuff that is noticed because it's in community with everyone around us. Interacting. That's what Jesus did. He left the safety of heaven, the perfect safety of heaven, to walk into this earth, lay it all aside, and get down into the mess of humanity, to love and to serve. And the religious leaders around Jesus, the religious leaders in this sermon here who were watching him, he'll address them soon, they're sitting there saying, what's your problem? They'll often come, we'll see this really soon, where they complain because they were separate from the tax collectors and the sinners, were walled off, the righteous ones. And Jesus was out there mingling and doing the work and making a difference and raising awareness of his mission and that has impacted the world now for 2,000 years since then. And we should be doing the same, letting our good deeds shine out for all to see, that being in community in such a way that people see something that is salt and light, that is attractive. And we ought to be attractive. If we are not attractive in how we live, we need to ask ourselves, are we living right? Or are we living too privately or wrong? I think Christians ought to live in such a way that the communities that we live in, people see us and say, I might not believe what they believe, but I wish there was more like them in this world today. I might not practice everything they practice or buy all of that, but I want to hire those kind of people to work in my company. I might not be all on board with what their belief system, but I wish our kids would be like that or date and marry people like that, because that's where the world would be a better place with more people like that. There ought to be something that's like, wow. And we can say, that's God's made a difference in our lives, and he loves us. That's why we serve. That's why we love others, and he loves you. And point God his glory. Light doesn't hide itself waiting for the darkness to pass. Light is what dispels the darkness. Light, being where it's at, makes it easier for everyone around to see what they're supposed to be doing. It's hard to know what you're supposed to be doing when you're working in the dark. You ever do that? Michelle and I recently went with some friends to Austin, Texas, to help lead a couple's retreat for business leaders and their spouses or partners. And during the time we were there, someone had that bright idea of doing some version of The Amazing Race, which, by the way, I love The Amazing Race. That's a lot of fun. Got into that later recently, and it's a fun show. Catching up. But anyhow, The Amazing Race. And it was fun. It was some athletic excursions, some strength things, some mind things, a different level. It was just silly, fun on a piece of property we were playing on. But one of the silly things we had to do during that contest towards the end was everyone had to make a paper airplane, and then we were going to like race our paper airplanes. I know it's not very intense, but you got to have your intense stuff, and then you have to have your stuff that other people can compete with who are not as athletic. And I'm thinking to myself, hey, I'm athletic, but I'm also an awesome paper airplane maker. Like, I am going to rock this category. When I make this airplane, I know how to do it, guys. Don't ever challenge me. You don't even know. When I make my paper airplane and we can see these sales, I'm going to win everything. Is going to blow them away. And then they told us, you have to do it blindfolded. And I thought to myself, that's okay. Because I'm so good at this, I can do it blindfolded. And so I got blindfolded and I made my paper airplane and it stunk. I never forget, I put that thing to sail, I threw it, and it was just waiting for the glory. And as soon as I made it, I already knew looking at it, oh boy. I thought it was better in my mind until I saw what I did. But I thought, this is still flying. And then it went, I think it went backwards. I think I lost territory. It's hard when you can't see what you're doing. If you're working in the dark, you're guessing, you're going to make some mistakes, you're going to get some things wrong, you're not going to be sure of yourself. But light, when light shows up, it's like, oh, now I can see what I'm supposed to be doing. Now I have some illumination. Now there's some clarity. And if we're the light of the world and we're where we're supposed to be, then we're bringing light where there's darkness. We're bringing clarity. We're bringing illumination. There's obviousness. There's a way that's being modeled that's a better way. But we won't do that if we're out not being light, or if we're light hidden in a box or a basket. If we're salt that's not salty, or if we're salt that's salty but staying in a container on the shelf. So let me summarize. I'm kind of saying the same thing, because it's not a very complicated, it's honestly only four verses. We've already read them, and I'm circling the same wagon pretty tight here, but here's why. Because I would feel it less necessary to beat this drum if I felt like we were all getting this really, we're rocking this. I think the White House is trying to do this pretty well, but there's a ways to go. And so let me just say a few things in summary. Instead of complaining that the world is corrupt, oh, the world is so corrupt, whatever that means, you know. Instead of complaining the world is corrupt, how about be the salt that preserves it? That's what salt's supposed to do. Instead of cursing the darkness, be the light. So just this last couple of weeks, we have been neck deep into our community, trying to serve and do things. We've served segments of our school, kids here at the church, and support them outside of here. We've done some things with the Penguin Plop and other things that have been just community driven. And our church has been involved. I've gotten involved. And it's always good when we're doing these things and we hear, you know, people say, thank you to Lighthouse Church for this. And we're there and we're smiling and we're making an impact. People know that the people here would be missed if we were gone tomorrow. And we were in the trenches the last couple of weeks working really hard in our community with our sleeves rolled up to make a difference. And somewhere in the middle of all that, it was so much joy and excitement and hard work and intensity and purpose. Somewhere in the middle of all that, I got a notification on my phone. And I had a moment to pause, so I pull up my phone and check my notification. And then I made the mistake of opening social media. And in social media, I just saw some random person right there. I had a notification there. Saw some random person there, a Christian, a professed Christian, griping publicly for all the world to see about what's wrong with the world today. This and that, I can't believe people, and I'm just like, oh, just like, I was like, what are you doing? Just, and I'm thinking, I don't get sucked into that space, that negative space. Just get out and do some good, man. Just get out and do some good. Go shine some light. Don't sit around and curse the darkness. Be the light. Don't sit there and complain that things are corrupt. Go be some salt, man. Preserve some things. Do something good. We ought to be out there just rolling up our sleeves and saying, how can we help? How can we contribute? How can we make a positive impact everywhere we live in the right way? Well, we got to figure that out. And I think we are trying to figure that out. But I'm challenging us not to lose sight of God's calling, because God is calling you to be what is needed where it is needed. That's a big idea. What is needed where it is needed. That's two prongs. If we are one or the other, we're missing the point. Let me tease that out just for a moment here. If you are where you're supposed to be, but not what you're supposed to be, it doesn't work. If salt is on the food it's supposed to season, but it's not salty, it doesn't work. If it's on the meat it's supposed to preserve, but it doesn't have its potency, it doesn't work. If you're where you're supposed to be, if you're in the darkness, but your light has gone dim, it doesn't work. It doesn't help anything. If we're where we're supposed to be, but not what we're supposed to be, it doesn't work. But on the flip side, if we're what we're supposed to be, nice and salty and brightly shining, but not where we're supposed to be, it doesn't work either. And that's why my background and experience has been seeing sometimes that churches can get to a spot, or Christians can get to a spot, where they look at others and say, look at those quote unquote believers over there who run off into the world and lose their salt and their light, and they become worldly, and that's a problem. And that's why we're gonna stay here in our little safe space and just pray for revival and feel better about ourselves. And I'm saying that's just the opposite ditch of the same road. Neither one of those things works. It only works if salt and light is salty and lighty. Makes sense. Where it is needed. We are called to be what is needed where it is needed. Because change happens when light meets darkness. Change happens when light meets darkness. And so, here's the call. What are we going to do? My advice to us all today is simply this: salt liberally and shine brightly. Let's not lose that flavor. In fact, here, let me give you a different application. It's potentially possible to say the way that salt can lose its flavor is by getting on the things it's supposed to salt, and then it loses its potency. So Jesus could be saying in that verse, don't get into this world in such a way that you lose what made you salt in the first place. Don't let it rub off your saltiness. Keep following me. Keep my values. Don't lose that while you're in this world. But also, out of fear of not losing that because of contact, don't hide your light in a place where no one sees it because it's meant to be out where it's dark. So here's the point. We can neither lose the things that calls us to do as his followers, nor hide away trying to follow it in our container. We must be salt and light, but we must shine. We must salt liberally. You ever do that with, and not with salt so much. When I go to a place and they're like, they're putting the Parmesan cheese on my meal. You ever been to one of those restaurants where they actually come by and say, sir, your stuff here, whatever. I'm like, oh yes. They're like, tell me when to stop. And I'm like, okay. And they're like going, and they're looking at me like, you want me to stop? I'll tell you when, you know, keep it going. Pour it on, baby, pour it on. So here's the thing. Let's salt liberally. Let's shine brightly. And if we can do those things, what is needed, where it is needed, following the teachings in the Sermon on the Mount, the teaching that Jesus taught us, modeling what he modeled and what he taught. Jesus was an example in word and deed. If we can do that, I think we can make a difference in this world. But we got to be bright. We got to get out of our box. So pull your candle out of your box, if you would. Where is light meeting the darkness? Where are we making a difference? Someone called me this week. I'm always going to point them out, but I won't embarrass anybody. Someone called me out this week and said to me, hey, I took the Sermon on the Mount points last week, and I was able to go to my job, and I got a little team I work with, and I was able to sit down in one of our team meetings and talk to them about those principles. And they're like, oh, you know, and it was helpful to us. And I thought, that's good. We're taking what we're hearing here, and we're taking it out and having conversations about it with people outside of the church. You know, where you work, you know. Getting involved in our community, outside of our jobs, though. We just punch in and go home. I've seen people do all sorts of things with hobbies and interests and good stuff and coaching around the town. Just find a way to get involved. Be salt, be light, where it is needed, on the earth, in the world. If we lose that, we lose the point.